FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
This episode of the Financial Survival Network is brought to you in part by Sandstorm Gold Royalties. Sandstorm Gold Royalties is a different kind of gold company. They purchase royalties on select mining operations and receive a percentage of the revenue in return. Sandstorm now has a portfolio of over 185 gold royalties around the world. See how gold royalties differ from other gold mining investments at sandstormgold.com. That's sandstormgold.com. Sandstorm Gold Royalties trades on the TSX as SSL and on the New York Stock Exchange American as SAND.
Welcome, and you are listening to and perhaps even watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 10/22/18, and with me for our maiden journey on video is our good friend, John Rubino. John, I know the makeup artist just left. She's been fluffing and fluffing. She fixed up your hair. You've got like this ruby red lipstick on and rouge. I mean, you just look like you're ready for Hollywood.
Well, thanks, Kerry. I think.
Yeah, I think. Actually, it's just your natural good looks coming through on the camera, John. You know, some of us are just blessed and others are blessed even more. But hey, you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind's blowing. I'm looking out my window here in not-so-sunny South Florida. Clouds are all over. You know, just a minute ago, blue skies all over. I mean, everything was going great, and now we're ready for a thunder shower. Perhaps that is a metaphor. Oh, and by the way, email us, kl@kerrylutz.com, if you wish to partake and be a member of the show. And don't forget, John's site is dollarcollapse.com. So, John, hey, we got gold getting knocked down $6 this morning. Looks like it's making a little bit of a comeback. We've got many FSN members who have written us. I can't even begin to tell you how many emails I've gotten recently. And we got a lot of catching up to do. But first, just tell us, what is going on here? Is the stock market just going to keep going up here? Or are we getting to a resistance point?
Well, this is one of those stretches where there's so much going on, it's hard to tease out what is causing what. Because you got the Saudi Arabia thing, which is a fairly big geopolitical deal. Mm-hmm. And you've got the stock market getting extremely volatile all of a sudden, in part because interest rates are going up, but also in part because earnings are coming out and a lot of big stocks, like, for instance, Netflix this past week, are doing things that it's hard for investors to figure out. And then you've got Italy and Europe in general. You know, the Italians just got downgraded to one notch above junk, which will just, you know, if they have to pay junk bond rates to borrow, that blows up their economy.
They're kind of
you've got Angela Merkel maybe out in the not too distant future as the German chancellor, and that will destabilize. You know, there's just so much going on right now. So
true.
You know, each of these things in and of themselves is good for 5 minutes on a show like yours, you know, where we dig into the details. So if you have any one of those in particular you'd like to talk about, I think they're all interesting.
Well, here's a great one. This guy's Michael. And of course, it's the usual accolades, especially discussions with John Rubino, informative, challenging, thought-provoking. I have a question for you and John, if you don't mind asking him and also providing your thoughts. He's got work experience in the retirement fund industry, and the actuaries and asset managers are always recommending a conservative investment approach. They provide the traditional non-contrarian view of investing, i.e., invest in diversified portfolios, buy your home, don't try to time the market, stay in the market through thick and thin, I might add, have a good weighting towards growth assets like equity, but balance this with bonds, property, etc. Don't invest yourself in stocks. Use index trackers or professional managers. Save at least 15% of your monthly gross income. Well, I'd love somebody to teach me how to do that. Mm-hmm. And they never recommend 5 to 10% holdings in precious metals, and they certainly don't recommend speculative, riskier investments such as junior miners. And they would shudder to think that I try to do my own homework and use a part of my net wealth to invest in good quality mining stocks and precious metals. Could you comment on the traditional wisdom and how you deal with it? Thanks again for a great show. Michael is from Cape Town, South Africa. I assume, Michael, you don't live on a farm and they're not trying to confiscate your land as we're speaking. If you do, probably your best bet is to get the heck out of there. So, John, traditional versus contrarian. You know, look, for the past 10 years, if you were invested in the traditional orthodoxy of investing, if that's not redundant, but if you were invested the way they said you should be, you would have done quite well. You probably would have quadrupled or quintupled your money. And really, your gold holdings would be down like 80, 90%, not the physical, but the stocks. The physical itself would be down by about, depending gold or silver, as much as a third. So maybe the geniuses on Wall Street, they tell you to do these things, maybe they're right.
Well, it's not just the past 10 years. If you go all the way back to World War II or in the 1950s, this was the right advice. You know, it makes sense to diversify in quote unquote normal times, which for us is to say as a credit bubble is being inflated. Mm-hmm. You want to own some stocks. You want to own some bonds. You want to own a little bit of cash. You want to own some real estate. And all of that works. And it all has worked. So for the baby boomers who were able to put away a little bit of money over time, they've done great. And they should be very happy with what their financial advisors have told them. So what we're mostly talking about, Gary, you and me on this show, is the fact that normal times are ending. We've had basically a nonstop credit expansion fueled by fiat currency and ever-increasing government debt and ever-increasing private sector debt since the 1950s. And it's inflated asset prices across the board. So you've had a rising tide that lifted all boats. So you diversify, and in any given situation, something you own is going up in that kind of a world. Well, it looks like that kind of a world is ending. We've taken the fiat currency, ever-increasing debt thing as far as it can be taken, or almost as far as it can be taken. And when that changes, then old investment strategies stop being the best investment strategies because they were designed for a world that no longer exists.
Yeah.
You know, when interest rates start going up, and fiat currencies start crashing and stocks and bonds get incredibly volatile, then all of a sudden your old risk-free portfolio, or at least the risk-free part of your portfolio, becomes the most risky part. You know, if government bonds are the bedrock safe asset that you own, and interest rates start going up, your government bonds will crash. That happened briefly in the 1970s when interest rates went from 5 or 6% on government bonds to 15 or 16%. And since the price of a bond is just the reciprocal of its interest rate or its yield, that means the price of those bonds crashed. So we're going to see something like that, but a lot more extreme over the next decade or two as the concept of fiat currency is called into question. And then the question becomes, how do you invest for that if the way that you've been told to invest and taught to invest and the way that has worked really well for you all these years isn't working anymore? And one strategy that has worked throughout history in times of financial crises is precious metals. You know, and you go back all the way to the Roman Empire, and countries have screwed up their currencies by borrowing too much money and creating too much currency and then inflating away their currency or devaluing it in one fell swoop. And each and every time, and there have been dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of times, precious metals have been the kind of money that people went back to when the other kinds of money failed. In other words, gold and silver went up in local currency terms, and they preserved purchasing power throughout all of those times. You know, the old stat that you see repeated a lot is that in the Roman Empire, an ounce of gold bought you a pretty nice man's toga.
Yeah.
And today it'll buy a reasonably good guy's suit.
Yeah.
In other words, it's held its purchasing power through revolutions and natural disasters and wars and devaluations and hyperinflations. And there's no reason to think that it won't again. So that's one place mm-hmm. where you hide out when things get crazy and incomprehensible. Other places that you hide out are well-chosen real estate. And that's part of the conventional wisdom today. And that part will probably be okay going forward as long as it's well-chosen real estate, not a San Francisco condo with San Francisco prices at all-time highs or a Vancouver townhouse or something like that. You don't want to be involved in a bubble market where these highly leveraged assets, which is what real estate bought with credit is, you don't want to own one of those. But a fully paid for rental house in a college town mm-hmm. where the economy is fairly stable because, you got a new crop of college kids coming in spending their money every year and the economy doesn't fluctuate the way it does in a resort town, for instance, or a city with a big financial sector that goes through booms and busts. So that'll be okay. And probably energy assets are also okay because, we need energy and we will continue to need energy regardless of what
Very
happens.
True.
So things like that'll be okay. In other words, real assets, mm-hmm. whereas financial assets in what's coming, if the financial system is failing, then financial assets that depend on the value of local currencies will probably fail too. So euro-denominated bonds are a bad idea probably
yes.
going forward because the euro has to be devalued. U.S. government bonds, traditionally the safest thing. As I said, they're not safe if interest rates are going up, mm-hmm. at least in the short run. Things like that, money market funds, bank accounts,
right.
Denominated in dollars, all of those things suddenly become very risky in the kind of world that very possibly might happen shortly. So that's a really long answer for a question that probably could be answered more concisely and by saying that the old ways of doing things were great. Now they're not going to work anymore. So we need new ideas.
Definitely do. One thing you and I haven't talked about a lot, but we've gotten some emails about it. And it's kind of not related to finance, but it really is related to a lot of what you talk about in terms of ungovernability and all this, is internet censorship on the three big platforms. I'm talking, Google, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. That's really the four main platforms because Google, YouTube's two separate platforms. They're really deliberately sabotaging or changing the results of the algorithms to not let conservatives and free thinkers content get displayed in the search results. We're seeing them demonetize all of this. And, this one person, a member of the community, Lars, mentioned a new browser that is much less intrusive, removes all ads and tracking software, cookie-free, and allows website publishers to get contributions in cryptocurrencies called the Brave browser. But, this is just another example of our ungovernability. Over the weekend, there was a video that got released of these protesters confronting Nancy Pelosi in Miami going into a restaurant for a fundraiser, and they were profane, F Nancy, F communism. And on the one hand, I'm happy, like, hey, good, they're getting a taste of their own medicine. On the other hand, this is really bad. Neither side should be encouraging it. They should both be encouraging civility, but they're doing the opposite. So this ungovernability, to me, this email kind of typifies that or exemplifies it, is really getting worse, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you got two things going on in what you said there. One is new technologies coming along that are changing the way we communicate, and regulation and social mores haven't caught up yet with the power of these new technologies. And I got to say, I actually feel kind of sorry for the social media platforms because they would really like everybody to be on and advertise and pay them money, right? They don't want to exclude people, but they're kind of stuck in between here, where if they let absolutely everybody post anything they want to, then they're accused of, for instance, allowing Russia to steal our elections and allowing people to lie for political gain. On the other hand, if they start going in and trying to figure out who's telling the truth and who's lying and who's shading the truth, then they're accused of censorship with an ideological bias. And they don't really know what to do. You know, they don't know where they should be in all of this.
Yeah.
Because they basically just want to make money. And so that's what they're trying to do, is find a place in the middle of all this where they make the maximum amount of money and make the fewest people mad. But, you know, this is brand new, uncharted territory. They don't know how to do it. The government regulators don't know what they should be doing. And regular posters are, it seems like, almost across the board unhappy.
Yes.
And this will shake out, but it's not clear how it shakes out and whether there's a government solution or whether somebody on some social media platform comes up with something that actually works and everybody else adopts it. I don't know. You know, that's a new technology's growing pains rather than a political issue. Although it's, you know, it's becoming political, but it's really about the technology.
Yeah.
Now the coarseness of society and everybody yelling at each other and this kind of incipient civil war we've got going here is only partially related to social media. It's more related to the fact that we've spent the last 40 years borrowing insane amounts of money, mm-hmm. and the big systems don't work anymore for people.
Yeah.
So you've got everybody at every point in the spectrum, other than the 1%, being mad about something. And so you've got the political world bifurcating, where if you're really aggressive ideologically, you energize your base and you tend to get more votes than somebody who's in the middle. Because if you try to straddle the two different points of view right now, you basically make both sides really mad, and it's hard to get elected that way. So you have to choose a side and go for it.
But what I would say, though, is that the Silicon Valley giants seem less concerned now about making money and more concerned about espousing a political ideology. Certainly, Twitter, Jack Dorsey is like that. Certainly YouTube, you know, we've got all these people getting fired from these companies for not thinking right, thinking correctly, retiring, having to leave, being driven out of companies because they don't agree with the existing leftist ideology. So it's kind of like these social media platforms have chosen their side and they've gone all in on it. And now it really is going to come down to the government having to be the referee here. Look, you know, during the election, when you would do a Google search and you type in Donald Trump and it would auto-complete it, is the Antichrist, and have like pictures of Satan coming up with the, you know, embracing Trump. And then you would put in Hillary Clinton and Mother Teresa, and they're, you know, pictured together feeding the poor, and she's just a saint, Hillary. And that's how they manipulate the search results. And then they're just knocking out like guys like Alex Jones. There's no justification for that. And who are they knocking them out for? In favor of CNN and MSNBC and the established media, which really, John, you and I both know is becoming more irrelevant by the day.
Yeah. Okay. What you just said is completely true, Kerry. But if you talk to somebody on the far left, their point of view is, oh my God, the Russians are taking over social media, they're, you know, Google and Facebook are letting the trolls steal our elections. Mm-hmm. So both sides are really unhappy with how this is going. And that's playing out in politics at large. And that's why you've got riots in Portland, Oregon, you know, the most peaceful town in the world now has riots in the street. And you've got politicians who can't go out to dinner anymore on both the right and the left, because now it's we're so mad at the other side, whatever side we're on. We hate the other side so completely that it's now suddenly okay to harass them in public, harass the people on the other side.
And it's disgusting. It's really disgusting. And the politicians countenanced it on the left.
Yeah.
And now they're getting it back and they're not happy. We need them all to come out and say, this is not right. You are allowed to have a private life. Just because I might not agree with your ideology or your political views doesn't mean that you need to be subjected to harassment in your day-to-day existence. We can save the debate for the stage in Washington or the State House or wherever, rather than all politics all the time. You know, everybody is kind of obsessed with politics in this country, and Trump is to a large extent responsible for that, both on the right and the left. But there's a lot more to life than just politics.
Yeah. Well, see, Kerry, you're talking about what should be.
Yeah.
And what is, in a world that is spinning out of control financially, mm-hmm. is social discord.
Yeah.
You know, you get riots in the street and you get civil unrest when you run out of money. And that's kind of what what's happening now. Although right now it's basically the 1% harvesting the rest of us. So we didn't run out of money in a macro sense, in a total amount of money sense, mm-hmm. but we've allowed a small group of bankers, politicians, and corporate CEOs to suck all the money in the system away from the rest of us. And so you've got very angry people on both sides of the spectrum now. You know, where it breaks, if you're a 40-year-old white guy who used to have a factory job and now works at Walmart, you can break either way. You know, you can become a Bernie Sanders supporter and hate Trump, or you can become a Trump supporter and hate the left.
Yeah.
And both views are completely valid based on what's going on. But, you know, you guys... Or people like that are missing the point that there's kind of a divide and conquer thing going on, in which the 1%, a largely non-ideological ruling class, has figured out a way to harvest the rest of us.
And to play.
And they actually kind of probably like it, that we're in the streets fighting over issues like immigration or abortion or you know, things like that that don't really affect the ability of Jamie Dimon at JPMorgan Chase to make another $1 billion. Because that distracts them from what the 1% is up to. That won't last. Eventually, mm-hmm. people figure out that they're being taken advantage of by their betters, you know, and then you get a French Revolution kind of thing. So we're creating the initial conditions in which things get much more serious from here if we don't do something about it. And it's clear that we're not doing anything about it. We're going to continue to borrow money and to create new currency, mm-hmm. and to just generally rev up the process of money being made and siphoned off to a handful of extremely rich people until the system breaks down. You know, we'll have a currency crisis at some point where nobody wants to hold these fiat currencies. Then we'll start looking around for the culprits, and you know, hopefully we'll figure out that it's the Fed, it's the political class, it's the giant banks, and a handful of other groups that have all gotten together to impoverish the rest
of us. True.
And that happened during the Depression, right? Or when we looked around and tried to figure out how the Depression happened, we concluded that it was these big trusts, these gigantic banks, mm-hmm. These oil companies that controlled everything. And we broke them up. We introduced antitrust laws that separated the different kinds of banks and kept the banking industry from becoming all powerful for a lot of decades, and we broke up the big oil companies, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to come to a similar conclusion at some point in which we see that gigantic governments that control their economies absolutely don't work. And, you know, a banking system that's dominated by like five banks, and even though there's another 1,000 banks out there, five of them dominate everything, that won't work. And so on throughout the major corporations. So you'll see a lot of antitrust legislation, hopefully. You know, that's the peaceful way
time.
Out of this.
Same with the media companies, too. Let's bust them up.
Yes, exactly.
We don't need multi-trillion dollar media companies, six of them controlling everything that or 99% of everything that you see as news. Anyway, it's just one of the examples. I'm glad we covered those questions. Hope you guys enjoyed. If you got any more questions, don't hesitate to write to us, kl@kerrylutz.com. Make sure you subscribe to both John's site and my site. His is dollarcollapse.com. Mine's financialsurvivalnetwork.com for our free newsletters. Hey, and if you're watching this on YouTube, please like, share, and friend or subscribe, whatever you do, just click that button, click the notification thing so you find out when new shows are up. That's why we're doing the videos. Hope this one was adequate. We will get better as we go along. Hey, look at the good side of things, John. At least I got the sound to work right this time, I think.
Okay. Looking forward to seeing this when it goes up.
Progress is being made. Hey, as long as you're moving ahead, then you're not moving backward. If you're staying in the same place, not moving ahead, then you're automatically moving backward because the world is passing you by. Anyway, that's it for today. Again, just write us. Oh, the Twitter feed's at Kerry Lutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. And if you go to iTunes, to the store, look for podcast Kerry Lutz. You'll find this one and Viral Podcasting. John, we'll talk to you again next week and maybe we'll do another video.
Thanks, Kerry. See ya.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.